Well, good morning. If you have a Bible, please turn to 2 Samuel chapter 23. 2 Samuel chapter 23. That's towards the beginning of the Bible. Just while you're turning to that, I'll give you the context once again. David is at the end of his life. David was the king of Israel. He was an interesting man. Started out as the youngest son. Worked as a shepherd boy, was a gifted musician, a poet, a songwriter, became a warrior, and then became the king of Israel. But at the end of his life, he's reminiscing about things that have happened, things that occurred to him, looking back at times, and we all love to do that, don't we? Look back at things that have happened to us. David's here and he's reminiscing about things that happened and giving thanks really to people that helped him through his life. And so we take up the reading at verse 8. These be the names of the mighty men whom David had. The Tachmonite that sat in the seat, chief among the captains. The same was Adino the Esnite. He lifted up his spear against 800 who he slew at one time. But after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, whom the three mighty men with David, when they defied the Philistines that were gathered together to battle, the men of Israel were gone away. He arose and smote the Philistines until his hand was weary, and his hand clave unto the sword. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people returned only after him to spoil. And after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Haragite. The Philistines were gathered together into a troop, where there was a piece of ground full of lentils. And the people fled from the Philistines, but he stood in the midst of the ground and defended it, and slew the Philistines. The Lord wrought a great victory. And 3 of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time into the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in a hold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." And the three mighty men brake through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem, that was by the gate, and took it, brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives?" Therefore, he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men. Well, we pray that God would bless the reading of his word and the preaching of it this morning. So we're introduced to these three mighty men, and it seems that David had a select and elite band of 30 men through his life. 30 men, special forces, chosen men, elite fighters. But of the 30, there were 3 that stood out, that stood above the others. And we're introduced to one, Adino. Adino, with his spear, slew one day, one at a time, 800 men. You know, to do anything repeatedly and in big numbers is tiring. On Monday of this week, I had to cater at Weatherinsett Camp for about 70 people. And I had 10 kilograms of mince. And I had to turn this mince into meatballs. And something in the region of 400 or so meatballs. Just little things, just rolling up some soft mince. But to do that for 2.5 hours, making meatballs is tiring work. Can you imagine having to spear to death 800 men, one after the other? And I think the lesson here is, don't get overwhelmed by the masses. When I saw that pile of mince an hour in, it didn't seem any smaller. But we just have to concentrate on what's before us, one at a time. And that's how battles are won, isn't it? Not looking at the big picture, not being overwhelmed, just one at a time. And this man, Adino, he took on 800 men, killed them with a spear. That's hard and that's heavy work, isn't it? And he did 800. Then we have Eleazar. Eleazar was in a battle with the others. David was there and the other three. And as they fought all day long, this man, holding his sword in his hand, when they got to the end of that battle, at the end of the day, and they'd been victorious, he couldn't let go of the sword. We read it had cleaved to him. His hand had cleaved to the sword. You know, I always like to look up where the first mention of a word is in the Bible. And we read that a man is to cleave to his wife so that the two become one flesh. And this sword in his hand had become part of him. His sweat, his blood, the sinews of his hand had gripped so hard, the ligaments and the tendons had become fixed there, and his sword became what he was. He wasn't letting go of that sword. If he'd let go of that sword, he would have died, and maybe the battle would have been lost. So he held on hard to what he knew would save him, and it became cleaved to him. We've got Shammah. Shammah was in a field, and there were other people in the field, a lentil field. Lentils are nutritious, full of protein. It was needed for the people to live. But along came a troop of Philistines, and they were going to take those lentils for themselves. And the rest of the people, they saw this troop, this armed troop of Philistines coming, and they fled. But Shammah didn't. He stood his ground. He stood in the midst of those lentils and he defended it. Those Philistines were going to get those lentils over his dead body. And he stood. You know, I think that reminds me of what we're to do in Ephesians. In Ephesians chapter 6, we read that we are to put on the whole armour of God that we may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And we read that we may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. You know, sometimes we don't have to go capturing ground. We don't have to go taking other land and places to win a battle. We just have to stand where we are, knowing that we're standing in the right place, on the right ground, and we're not to be moved from that. I've a friend who was an officer in the army, and when he was at Sandhurst, he tells me about a lecture that he had, and the man was saying how a general will appoint different regiments to different tasks. And he said that if you've got a people that are from a city, they've never had land, he said, and point them at a piece of ground and tell them if they win that battle, they can have it. He said they'll gladly storm a hill, fight a battle to win some ground. He said, but they're no good at keeping it. They want another battle to go off. And this is where it's interesting, because he said, get a regiment from Suffolk. They're people of the land. Let the infantry from the cities, let those regiments come and take the land, and then give it to some regiments from somewhere like Suffolk. He said, because put them there and tell them it's theirs, and they'll not let anybody come and have it off them. So isn't that wonderful? Stand, if you know where you're stood before God, stand there and don't move from that place. But then we're introduced to these three mighty men. And then David recounts how he was in the cave of Adullam. He was fleeing for his life. He wasn't a king at this point, just a young man. And he fled for safety to the cave of Adullam. And these three, they came to him there. And it was summertime and it was hot. And they were stuck in this cave. And they were thirsty. And if they had water, you can imagine it was dirty water, tepid. David longs back to his childhood when he lived in Bethlehem. And he thought of the water of the well of Bethlehem, how it was cold and fresh and clean, rejuvenating. And he longed for the water of Bethlehem. And he made his longing known to these men. And these men, probably quietly, said to themselves, let's go get David some of that water. Now, where they were in the cave of Adullam, there was a troop of Philistines between them and Bethlehem. Bethlehem had become the garrison town of the Philistines, so the army of the Philistines was stationed in Bethlehem. And not only that, what's the most defended part of any garrison or any city? It's the gate, isn't it? And this well itself was by the gate. So it wasn't that they could sneak in somehow. This well was by the gate, by the most defended part of that garrison. But these three men, they made a journey, probably about 12 miles or so, avoided the troop of the Philistines, got to the garrison town, and I imagine that they had to fight their way there to the well, and then while two kept fighting, one let down the pitcher to draw from that well. And then having got that water, made that journey back, all the while in danger, probably being pursued by Philistines, to take David this water. And David sees them come back with what he said he so wanted, what he so desired. Can you imagine also these men, they're thirsty. They've just done thirsty, hard work. And they've had access to this cool, refreshing water. They don't have it for themselves. They bring it to their captain and to David. David sees them with this water. And he wouldn't drink it. He wouldn't drink it. But he poured it out to the Lord. I wonder why David did that. You think he might do that and offend these men? Offend these three brave warriors? They've risked so much for him. They could have died at any step of that way. They left the comparable safety of the cave. Went a long journey, encountering enemy soldiers. They came to a garrison of soldiers. They fought there to get access to the well. And David's just poured it out. They wanted it for him to drink, for him to refresh his thirst, for him to wet his lips, for him to be rejuvenated. But David just poured it out. David poured it out to the Lord. You see, these men, they were doing David a great service. They were bringing him a great honour. They were bringing their praise to David, their sacrifice to David. They had 100% commitment about the task that they were about with David in mind. Every ounce of their being was engaged in this task that they'd set themselves to bring David this water. All of their talents, all of their skills were there for David. But David knew that he was not worthy. David knew himself that he's not worthy of their praise, their efforts, their sacrifice. David knew that there's only one who is worthy of such dedication. David knew that any praise that they were trying to give to him should really go to the Lord. And so David did not want to take this water and drink it, but rather he poured it out to the Lord. He poured it out to the Lord. I wonder in our hearts, if you're a Christian, or maybe if you're not a Christian, it matters not, but are you living for praise that would come to you? Are you living for yourself? Are you living in such a way that you want things for yourself? You know, this water, it would have done David so much good. It could make the case that he deserved it. He'd been in that cave in the heat. He'd had nothing good to drink. Well, he deserved that water. Is your focus on yourself? On your needs? On the place that you have in society or among your friends? Because David wasn't. David knew that there's only one that deserves our praise. There's only one that deserves the commitment that these three brave men have had. There's only one that we should risk our life for, and that's the Lord. And so David pours out this water to the Lord. And I think David's view of the Lord was the view that we had as we read from John. David's view of the Lord was the one that is the water of life. David would know also that if he drank of that water of Bethlehem, it would be lovely, it would be tasty, it would be refreshing, but not long after he will be thirsty again. Humans can live about 3 weeks without food. Only 3 days without water. And so David's thirst would quickly return again. But he knew of a source of water that was everlasting. We had it in that beautiful story of the woman at the well. Jesus comes to her. It's the middle of the day. It's 12 o'clock. It's hot. The sun's beating down and no one else goes to draw water then. They'd rather do it in the early morning or in the cool of the evening. But this woman, she's there in the middle of the day. Why? Because she is ashamed of her life. Maybe she's ridiculed by others for the life that she's lived. So she goes alone but finds Jesus there. And Jesus asks her to draw water. And Jesus says, doesn't he? Whoever drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water shall be in him a well of water springing up to everlasting life. And this lady says, give me this water so I don't have to keep coming back to this place again. Jesus says, go call your husband. And she says, well, I have no husband. Jesus deals with the sin in her life. You see, before we can come to drink of that fountain that's there, we need to acknowledge that we're sinners before God. I think David did that in that cave. I think in that moment when those men came bursting in with that beautiful water, David realised that he was not deserving of that water. He acknowledged the wrong that was in his life. And he turned that water to praise to the one that deserves it, to the fountain of everlasting water. This woman, she saw her sin, he pointed it out to her, and she came to Jesus, came to the fount of everlasting water. Where does that fount spring from? Well, it can only spring from one place, can't it? And that's Calvary, on the cross when Jesus bled and died. We read in chapter 19, that the soldiers came to break the legs of the first and the legs of the other that were crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus, they saw that he was dead already, and break not his legs, but one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith they came out blood and water. And it's that blood and it's that water that we need to go to have our thirst quenched. It's because Jesus on the cross died there and shed his blood and shed his water that we deserve. We all of our praise, he deserves. All of our efforts, he deserves. All of our sacrifice, he deserves. Have you come to that fount? Have you had your thirst quenched in him? I can tell you, there's nowhere else you can go to have your thirst quenched. Nowhere else. And there's no one else deserving of our praise. That's what David saw in that cave. That water from Bethlehem, beautiful as it was, had been won at such cost, with such jeopardy. The men's blood had been risked to bring him that water. And David knew that one day there was coming one who would shed his blood and his water for us, that we might drink. So I hope this morning you've been caused to think and question whether you've come to the fountain, whether you've drunk thereof, and where you're giving your praise. Are you accepting praise that's not rightfully yours? So come to the fountain and drink.